Ellie, in the week since I last wrote to you, I have to confess that I have become a different man. Experiences such as the ordeal I have just undergone must surely come but once in a lifetime. For if more often, how might man survive them? I have gazed upon the Gorgon and lived to tell the tale, for which I am profoundly grateful, and I hasten to explain myself before you worry for my safety, although only the guiding hand of some angel of grace can account for my being in a position to put ink to paper with these words. I was at dinner alone with the mater last Tuesday evening, Mr. Robertson being laid up and Lieutenant Bruce off to Gilgit to procure supplies for his secret expedition to Lhasa, when we were interrupted most rudely at our repast. "Holiness!" The runner, quite breathless with fear, threw himself upon his knees in front of us. "Your brother! Please hasten, I implore you!" His Excellency Nizam al-Mulk looked at me with that wicked expression of his. He bears little affection for his brutish hulk of a brother, and with good reason. Where the mater is a man of refined, albeit questionable, sensibilities, his brother is an uneducated, coarse hill man, one step removed from the banditry. Chitral can very well do without his kind. "What has happened to my beloved brother?" asked al-Mulk. At this point the runner lapsed into a gabble that I could barely understand. With patience the mater drew him out, then frowned. Turning to me, he said, "We have a—I know not the word for it in English, excuse please. It is a monster of the caves and passes who preys upon my people. My brother has gone to hunt it, but it appears to have got the better of him." "A mountain lion?" I said, misunderstanding. "No." He looked at me, oddly. "May I inquire of you, Captain, whether Her Majesty's government tolerates monsters within her empire?" "Of course not." "Then you will not object to joining me in the hunt?" I could feel a trap closing on me, but could not for the life of me see what it might be. "Certainly," I said. "By Jove, old chap, we'll have this monster's head mounted on your trophy-room wall before the week is out."
"I think not," Nizam said coolly. "We burn such things here to drive out the evil spirit that gave rise to them. Bring you your mirror tomorrow."
"My—" Then I realized what he was talking about, and what deadly jeopardy I had placed my life in for the honor of Her Majesty's government in Chitral. He was talking about a Medusa, and although it quite unmans me to confess it, I was afraid. The next day, in my cramped, windowless hut, I rose with the dawn and dressed for the hunt. I armed myself, then told Sergeant Singh to ready a squad of troopers for the hunt.
"What is the quarry, Sahib?" he asked.
"The beast that no man sees," I said, and the normally imperturbable trooper flinched.
"The men won't like that, sir," he said.
"They'll like it even less if I hear any words from them," I said. You have to be firm with colonial troops. They have only as much backbone as their commanding officer.
"I'll tell them that, Sahib," he said, and saluting, went to ready our forces.
The mater's men gathered outside, an unruly bunch of hillmen, armed as one might expect with a mix of flintlocks and bows. They were spirited, like children, excitable and bickering, hardly a match for the order of my troopers and I. We showed them how it was done. Together with the mater at our head, Kestrel on his wrist, we rode out into the cold bright dawn and the steep-sided mountain valley. We rode for the entire morning and most of the afternoon, climbing up the sides of a steep pass and then between two towering peaks clad in gleaming white snow. The mood of the party was uncommonly quiet, a sense of apprehensive fortitude settling over the normally ebullient Chitrali warriors. We came at last to a mean-spirited hamlet of tumble-down shacks, where a handful of scrawny goats grazed the scrubby bushes. The hetman of the village came to meet us, and with quavering voice directed us to our destination.
"It lies thus wise," remarked my translator, adding, "The old fool, he say it is a ghost-bedeviled valley, by God. He say his son go in there 2-3 days ago, not come out. Then the mater, blessed be he, his brother follow with his soldiers, and that 2 days ago."
"Ha! Well," I said, "tell him the great white empress sent me here with these fine troops he sees, and the mater himself and his nobles, and we aren't feeding any monster."
The translator jabbered at the headman for a while, and he looked stricken. Then Nizam beckoned me over. "Easy, old fellow," he said. "As you say, Your Excellency." He rode forward, beckoning me alongside. I felt the need to explain myself further. "I do not believe one Gorgon will do for us. In fact, I do believe we will do for it."
"It is not that which concerns me," said the ruler of the small mountain kingdom. "But go easy on the headman. The monster was his wife."
We rode the rest of the way in reflective silence to the valley where the monster had built her retreat, the only noises the sighing of wind, the thudding of hooves, and the jingling of our kits.
"There is a cave halfway up the wall of the valley here," said the messenger who had summoned us. "She lives there, coming out at times to drink and forage for food. The villagers left her meals at first, but in her madness she slew one of them, and then they stopped."
Such tragic neglect is unknown in England, where the poor victims of this most hideous ailment are confined in mazed bedlams upon their diagnosis, blindfolded, lest they kill those who nurse them. But what more can one expect of the half-civilized children of the Valley Kingdoms here on the top of the world? The execution, for want of a better word, proceeded about as well as such an event can, which is to say that it was harrowing and not by any means enjoyable in the way that hunting game can be. At the entrance to the small canyon where the woman had made her lair, we paused. I detailed Sergeant Singh to ready a squad of rifles. Their guns loaded, they took up positions in the rocks, ready to beat back the monster should she try to rush us. Having thus prepared our position, I dismounted and, joining the mater, steeled myself to enter the Valley of Death. I'm sure you have read lurid tales of the appalling scenes in which Gorgons are found. Charnel houses strewn with calcined bodies, bones protruding in attitudes of agony from the walls as the mad men and mad women who slew them gibber and howl among their victims. These tales are, I am thankful to say, constructed out of whole cloth by the fevered imaginations of the degenerate scribblers who write for the penny dreadfuls. What we found was both less and much worse than that. We found a rubble-strewn valley, in one side of it a cave.